I might ask you, Mr. Page, at this point, you were, you've been in Detroit now for about 6, 7, 8 years. Had you gotten married at this point?
I got married in 1938.
And tell us a little bit about your wife.
Well, that was one of the best moves I ever made.
What was your wife's name?
Louise.
Louise
Shamlian.
Uh-huh. How do you spell it?
Shamlian.
Uh-huh. Where'd you meet her?
And I met her at the YMCA. The YMCA had threw a party one day.
Sure, great social for young bachelors.
And that's where I met her. Yeah.
Yeah. What attracted you to her?
Well,
she was obviously your spirited and handsome lady.
And her personality, of course, and everything.
Could she dance well?
Yeah, but much better than I could. I never was much of a dancer. Much to her regret.
She never quite forgave you.
No.
And so where did you live at that point?
Well, I was still living there at the Y at that time.
But this was in 38. Did you then rent a house somewhere in the vicinity?
No, and I rented rooms.
No, I mean when you got married.
Oh, when we married, yeah. We had a little apartment up on the third floor of a place in Highland, on Tyler Street in Highland Park.
Tyler?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And this was a third floor apartment. The only means of a fire escape, we had a rope tied around a steamer trunk. And the steamer trunk was under the bed.
Uh-huh.
And you're supposed to, in case of fire, you're supposed to throw the rope out the window. Go down the rope. The rope didn't have any knots in it either, I don't think. So it was really a, being young, we didn't feel to think anything about it, but
right,
To kind of think back on it, gosh, it was really a fire trap up there, because it was a very narrow staircase, barely wide enough to squeeze through, and it was a right angle turn, and to get up there to the third floor, and we had a little...
It was tough getting that steamer trunk up there.
Yeah, I don't know how they did that.
Yeah.
Come to think of it, I don't know how they did it. But we had a little electric burner for a stove, I guess. My wife would remember more of those details than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived there for quite a while. Her name was Mrs. Howard, I remember her name.
Mm-hmm.
And we were real happy, and we threw quite a few parties up there, and all the guys from Chrysler came over.
Really?
Many times. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was another thing. Those early days were the most social.
Mm-hmm.
No place else did we work, did we form these friendships with the people at work like we did at Chrysler.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so you're always getting to get at each other's place and
have
parties, spaghetti parties, or?
Oh, I don't remember what we
ate. Did they drink much in those days?
Nobody ever got soused.
Uh-huh.
But
just a lot of fun.
Yeah, we had a lot of
fun. Of
course,
you were sharing a camaraderie that nobody else had.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was a tight little knit group, and there weren't very many of us in the whole country, you know.
Right.
So it was kind of a novel thing, and oh boy, it was fun.
Did you used to share rumors and stories about what was happening to other designers at other companies?
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did that.
Probably a lot of stories about Harley Earl and so forth.
Yeah, there's what do they used to say about Harley? There was a funny little poem they used to have about him. You've probably read it. I can't remember what it was. I don't know. There's another man I forgot to mention. Was Dick Pawlowski. Oh gosh, I don't know how you spell his name.
Try.
P. You know, it was SKY on the end. I really don't remember how he spelled his name, but he was a heck of a nice guy, and
he
worked as a designer for a while, but he was never really into it like the rest of us were. He worked there for a while, and then he went on to engineering, I think.
Yeah.
And
well, in any event, you were happily married and children on the way?
Our first one was born in 41,
uh-huh.
Just after Pearl Harbor.
And what was
That was a girl. Her name is Priscilla.
Mm-hmm.
She's now living in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little granddaughter.
Oh, great.
For her, and then I have my other daughter in Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
She's got two boys. And then I've got a son in Seattle, too, and he's got two boys up there. So we've got five grandchildren.
And then working for Boeing?
No. No. My son, Ted, is a professor at the University of Washington. And
what does he teach?
He teaches ichthyology about fish.
Mm-hmm.
And my other one in Ann Arbor, as I say, is in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And Priscilla, Peppy is her nickname, is an occupational therapist. Mm-hmm. And
all born around the same time, like within 5 or 10 years?
All born in Michigan, yeah. The ages are 41, and Ted was born in 45, I think, and Louise was born in 47, I think, somewhere in there. They're about 3 years apart.
Good. In 44, you got a wanderlust of some kind, and you decided to at least make a change.
Well, that wasn't the first time.
No, I know that. But I mean, wanderlust hit you again.
It hit me again, yeah.
What attracted you to Briggs Manufacturing Company?
Well, it was a new experience, new people to work with, probably different ways of doing things, and just to add to experience. Then, of course, the fact that I could make some more money by making the change.
Well, what was the situation? How would you make more money and why?
Well, because they would offer you more.
I see. Uh-huh.
And all this was a lot of fun and made for a very interesting career, but of course at the very end it didn't do an awful lot for your pension.
Mm-hmm. Because that's right. In those days
you couldn't accumulate.
That's right.
I don't know if you can now or not.
I'm not sure.
Probably
it
not.
Depends on the individual company.
Yeah.
Well then, but of course Briggs had been operating since the late 20s and. In terms of assigning services, you call it. And they also had a fairly close relationship with Chrysler back in the 30s. So did you have some contact with them then? Did you know...
When I was at Chrysler?
Yeah, did you know Charda, Mr. Charda?
No, I never met Charda, but... or W.O. Briggs, either.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew they existed, of course, but we didn't know exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway...
Where were they located in those days?
It was over on Outer Drive.
Autodrive.
Now, when I first met with them, they were down on, they were downtown, over near the Hudson plant. What was that? Anyway, it was a dirty old plant,
uh-huh.
And they moved out of there to that nice new place on Outer Drive.
What year was that, roughly?
It must have been 45, 46, somewhere around there.
And they must have had. In 1944, was Briggs doing war work?
I'm sure they were, yeah.
But that wasn't what you were.
No.
Were they beginning to think about post-war styling, post-war design?
Well, I think, yeah, they probably were, and that's, they had, I worked for Al Prance over there.
Yes,
P-R-A-N-C-E.
Who was he?
He was the head of the styling department for Briggs.
Uh-huh.
And his assistant.
Charda apparently had left him.
Yeah.
I see.
His assistant was Walt Wengren. Walt Wengren is dead now, too. Just a young guy he was.
How do you spell that?
W-E-N-G-R-E-N.
Wengren.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And...
What was the setup there?
Well, they had a beautiful, beautifully decorated styling section.
Uh-huh.
Both an interior and an exterior. I mean, the interior room was all done in neutral shades of gray so as not to influence any of the color fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a woman there, I forget her name, she was head of that department.
Remember her name?
And,
that would be interesting to know what her name was.
I can't think of it. Anyway, well...
She was the head of the fabrics in the color department?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Al had a big hand in that too, Al Prance.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of that himself. And Walt Wengren was our boss, and he didn't have that was the only boss we had. And
what sort of contracts were they working on in 44?
Well, they had Packard and they had Chrysler.
But this is obviously looking toward the end of the war.
Yeah.
Or were they doing, or were they servicing the...
They were servicing, I'm just trying to think.
The military vehicles that they were, that those people.
Well, we wouldn't have had anything to do with that anyway, had the, you know, the military.
What kind of upholstery and color contract would they have had in 1944? Automotive?
Well, it was suggestions, like I say, that they'd try to sell these ideas to Chrysler or to Packard.
Looking towards the end
of
the war?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, everybody
was
sort of looking.
Yeah, they were all.
1944, things were looking pretty good.
Yeah. We all figured that they'd be folding up pretty soon.
Yeah, so they decided to get cracking on the post-war designs. So.
Right.
But what do you have you doing, Mr. Wengren?
Well, there was a big variety of things, as always. And I remember we did some special sedans for, I think they were for WP Chrysler. And we did several of those.
What were they? You mean special personal cars?
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, I can't pick out any particular one because I don't think any of them ever got built.
Oh, these are just proposals.
Yeah,
that
right.
You wanted drawn up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether he wanted them or not, we gave he got them.
And they were his personal requests.
Yeah.
Quest, so.
Yeah.
What were they, rather flamboyant?
No, they were formal design. I mean,
formal sedans.
Yeah. Sedans and
a lot
with good headroom and everything for. And yeah, maybe.
Chrysler had a fetish about head.
Yeah, especially under K.T. Keller.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
You know the old joke about him? They had the K.T. 300.
Uh-huh.
The K.T. was for, or was Keller's. What was that? Anyway, it was Keller's initials, and the 300 was his weight.
What, did you ever meet K.T. Keller?
No, I'd see him around.
But you'd see him, yeah.
Yeah.
He was Chrysler's right-hand man, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a bigger on the outside, smaller on the inside, or the other way around.
Really? What do you mean by that?
Well, that was in 1939 when they came out with awful-looking cars,
mm-hmm.
that were real dumpy and had no sex appeal, whatever. And
you think that was his influence?
Yeah, largely it was. He was strictly practical. Things had a lot of interior space, and
uh-huh.
they probably were comfortable to get in and out of. And, but they just didn't have any appeal to anywhere. No.
This would sold poorly, I suspect.
Yeah, I don't think they broke any sales records with those.
And what was the slogan? Bigger on the what?
It was bigger on the inside, smaller on the outside.
I
had it backwards.
Well, his. All consuming passion was interior comfort and room.
Yeah. Which I can go along with if you combine it with good looks, then you're really doing something.
Yeah.
But just to have something that has a lot of room inside, and you know, you end up with an awful looking box.
What happened? They had a lovely roomy interior and it was junk on the outside.
Well,
where do you think the roadblock was on that?
Well, they didn't appeal to people.
No, I mean in the styling department. What was the lack of imagination?
Well, we wouldn't have anything. If the big boss says you do something, you know, that's what you do.
Keller had this great idea for the interior, but he didn't give them with the exterior.
No.
As long as they were practical.
No, he just wanted it to be a comfortable, practical car.
Of course, the Zeter triumvirate was concentrating on the engine and the body.
That's right.
So the styling sort of went by the board.
Sorry, styling was an orphan. You know, they didn't. They were strictly under the thumb of engineering.
Uh-huh.
And another thing that was strange about it, we'd work on these designs for weeks and months, and it didn't matter what we came up with. It was what you happened to be doing at the time, the deadline, that was what got built.
No.
Yeah, that's the way it worked.
What happened to all those countless sketches?
Just
memories that you did.
Forget them.
Just forget them. Huh?
Yeah.
You mean, as the deadline approached, somebody would come down and say, okay, that's it.
Yeah, you've got to, or it's that effect.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's the way it worked.
And all the others you've done for months
meant nothing. No, and you could have had some really good.
Well, of course,
if we'd gotten smart, I guess we would have tried to hold the good stuff until the end. But we ever managed that.
But apparently, I guess they felt you were progressing. You were doing an evolutionary kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
They felt things were getting better all the time.
Yeah, but
that's not the way it works. No.
Wouldn't that have been something if you kept the best designs and put them on the top of the pile?
Yeah, that's what I say. You know, if somebody in our group had been sharp enough to think of that, why? Might have been able to work something, I don't know.
Incredible. So,
but you'd have to keep it away from Cadwalader. And
yeah, not letting him know what you're doing.
This is Chrysler I'm talking about.
Yeah, right. Well, Briggs was preparing for the post-war, the post-World War II, in retrospect, what appeared to be a car explosion. Everybody wanted a car. All the returning servicemen wanted
a car. Oh, yeah, sure.
And
when you could sell almost anything, yeah.
And they were figuring in 1944 when you went there that they better be ready with some good proposals for their various clients.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And Chrysler was one of them. What other clients did they have?
Just Packard.
Packard and Chrysler.
Uh-huh.
They were no longer doing anything before.
There's an interesting thing about that Packard.
Yeah.
I don't know if you recall or not, but the Packard Clipper that came out in 40, I think it was. The beautiful car. Mm-hmm. The long fenders that swept into the front doors, and a very, very beautiful car.
Who was responsible for that?
And I don't recall who got the credit for that. Mm-hmm. Was it Amos Northup? I don't know.
Could be.
Anyway.
Northup. Yeah.
Anyway, they ran that model for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been 41, I guess, when it came out. 42, I remember, was painted out for the war.
Uh-huh.
And then the first facelift was not quite as nice as the original, which is the usual way it goes.
Uh-huh.
And then finally they decided to do a new front, just do a minor front end change.
This is 47?
Yeah.
46.
I think it was 47, I think. And my friend Walt Brocker, he was a modeler. He worked on the film.
That's right. Brocker was played by Briggs?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, Bob Cotto was there at the time, too. Anyway, the idea was to do just a minor front-end change. So they all started working on it. Of course, he's working under instructions, you know, and to what to do.
Yeah.
In other words, I'm not blaming this on him because he was a wonderful, great modeler.
Yeah.
He would. Anyway, the thing went kept going and going and going a little further, a little further, and a little further. They ended up the whole side of the body. They made it a flush side body, and it was just a big tub, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they ended up, the only thing they didn't change on the front of the car was the location of the headlamps. And the car would look better if they had spread the lights out.
Mm-hmm.
But because that's the way it went, they just left the lights in there. And the whole thing would have looked less tubby if the lights had been further out. But that's how funny things are, you know, they just happen. That's the way it happened.
And you worked on that thing?
No, I didn't have much to do with it. I think I did a hood ornament or something inconsequential.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have much to do with it. Walt Brocker did all of it himself.
Just who's that?
He's the modeler.
What's his name?
Brocker.
What's his
first name? B-R-O-C-H-E-R.
What's his first name?
Walter.
He was the head modeler at where?
At Briggs.
At Briggs.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He was instrumental in shaping.
He modeled the thing, and with what he had to work with, he did an excellent job.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was a shame. I don't know if you're there. Can you visualize that car?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Just a big tub.
Mm.
It was such a graceful car. Anywho.
Well, you worked at Briggs from 1944 to 1947.
Right.
And still doing fairly journeyman type projects, working on parts and
The usual.
As everybody else did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anyone who worked on full size cars? I mean.
Well, yeah,
we all did
that blackboard work where you have a car. Sometimes we use tape for the lines. That came on in later years. We didn't do that at first.
Mm-hmm.
That came on later.
Yeah.
And I used to like that too because it was line work, and I've always loved profile drawings. Lines to me are very interesting, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And not all designers felt that way, but
really.
No.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know. Just different. There's all kinds of designers, and
Mm-hmm.
So.
You began to get restless at Briggs. Why?
I don't remember the real.
Why'd you make the change?
I'm just trying to think. It's probably the same reasons. Just.
Which were?
Restless.
Uh huh.
Want something new? Try something different.
Uh huh.
And Briggs was. Briggs was kind of a back road. It was, you know.
Was it?
Well, we didn't.
You weren't in the mainstream.
We had a very little chance of selling anything.
Yeah.
Because it was just a sort of a. See, the thing is, they had this service because they did some of the manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
They manufactured the bodies. So they provided this styling service just as sort of a goodwill. This is the way I was always told about it.
Sort of a throwaway?
Yeah, as a goodwill gesture, so to furnish. And also to, I guess it stimulated them building more bodies for.
Mm-hmm. So you were in a real service industry at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And not a real production type of thing.
Yeah.
So after a while you begin to get.
You never had too much chance of getting in production, but there you had even less. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to go to a real car company.
Yeah.
And how did that happen?
Well, I don't remember who I went to see or how I who I worked through getting there, but I...
How did it come about? Did you go over to Jibrin?
Yeah, I must have gone over and interviewed, the usual. Take a day off,
uh-huh.
Call up and say you got a headache or something.
Right. They didn't care because you got docked anyway.
No.
Oh, if you were sick, you were okay.
No, if I went sour, you didn't get docked.
Oh, okay.
So, I worked for...
Well, wait a minute, who'd you see? Do you remember? Where'd you go?
Who hired me?
Where'd you go? Did you go to the engineering building?
Well, at that time, it was in the airframe building.
Where?
They call it the airframe in Dearborn.
In Dearborn, huh? Mm-hmm. What street? Do you remember? What's that?
No, but it's right there near Greenfield Village.
It was on the boulevard there that ran between the...
Where the Dearborn Inn is.
Yeah, right. Right across from there, huh?
Yeah.
Sort of okay.
They call it the airframe building.
Uh-huh. Who'd you talk to there?
That's what I don't remember, who interviewed me.
Okay.
But
at that time... Do you remember what he said to you?
Well, it ended up, he hired me.
He liked your work, you took your portfolio?
Oh, you always took samples.
Okay, yeah.
And...
So what did your employees and friends say at Briggs? What did they say? Good luck? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Glad you're getting out of this hole?
There was an awful lot of changing around. I wasn't the only one.
They were standard procedure.
Yeah, we did a lot of changing around.
So, did you have to move to get over to Dearborn, or were you able to take the streetcar?
No. No, I drove. It was 25 miles each way.
Oh, you bought a car. What car did you
drive? Well, my first car was a 34 Plymouth convertible, which was a show car at the World's Fair of 1933.
Really?
In New York.
How'd you have to get all that?
It was on a used car lot.
Priceless or somebody else's?
No, I don't remember. I think it was all kind of just a used car lot.
You mean they sold those show cars?
They did that one.
Used car deal?
There wasn't anything special about it except that the wheels were chromed.
Oh, I see.
And
what'd you pay for it?
$400.
Wow.
And
was it a good car?
Yeah, I was in pretty good shape. Uh-huh. And I drove it. I loved the thing. I drove it for, let's see, it was a 34 model. I drove it till 39.
Wow. Then what did you buy after that?
Then I bought a 39 Plymouth Business Coupe. It was new,
uh-huh.
And it was just before the war, and I wanted something that would take me through the war. I think that was the idea.
Mm-hmm. So, well, your loyalty to Chrysler products remains.
I've had a lot of them, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah, I've got
you,
one.
You always knew they were well-engineered.
Yeah.
That's what you needed to get you through the war.
Yeah.
Did you drive that all through the war?
Right, yeah.
And have any problem with gasoline or tires? You were in
I remember they gas. Remember they had these stickers.
Yeah.
I think we had an A sticker, and I don't remember
that
what that
was because
meant.
You were in essential war work.
I suppose so, yeah.
And you had to drive back and forth.
Yeah. We had a pool where we'd take turns with
carpools.
A couple other
That's
guys.
That's when the carpools first started, wasn't it?
I guess so,
in World
yeah.
War II, yeah. They're quite yeah. common today.
Yeah.
What...
There were three of us in the car, three cars.
So this is in 1946, and you got to drive all the way from where?
From
you still
I was living in Royal Oak at the time.
Oh, you'd moved to Royal Oak.
Right out near the Shrine of the Little Flower.
Oh yes, uh-huh. Good old Father Coughlin.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You weren't Catholic, right?
Yeah, I was born Catholic.
Oh, were you? Did you practicing Catholic?
I broke away.
Did you attend the Shrine of the Little Flower?
Oh, once in a while, I go for.
But you.
Not for any.
But just to see Father Coughlin
yeah,
perform.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Yeah. Do you remember his radio broadcast?
Oh yeah.
They were immensely popular.
Oh, they were. Yeah, he was a spunky guy. He had a lot to say, whether you agreed with him or not. It was interesting because he was controversial, you know.
Oh yeah, everybody listened to him whether they agreed to him or not.
Oh yeah, right.
Did you agree with him all day?
I don't remember.
Yeah, long ago.
I probably wouldn't know anyway.
So you're living in Royal Oak, and you've got a you must have a new. Are you still driving the Plymouth in 1946? Mm-hmm. No,
I bought a car that I really fell in love with, a Studebaker Starlight Coupe. It had the round back.
First
engine.
Post-war one?
Yeah, 47.
Okay.
I loved it there, but it was a bad car.
Was it? Yeah. It was a bad engineer?
No, it burned oil, and it was never a good car. Uh-huh. But I loved the looks of the thing.
Later on, did you ever ask anybody what happened to that?
What?
It was so bad?
No. They... I don't know. It's just this happened to be a bad one, I guess.
Yeah, a lemon.
Yeah.
But you don't think the whole line was bad, just that one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what did they have you do it for, and who did you work for there?
Well, I worked for Bob McGuire.
Bob McGuire. Can you tell us about Bob McGuire? We've heard his name. What kind of guy was he?
Well, he was a real individual too.
Mm-hmm. Highly individualistic.
Oh yeah. And he was fun. Mm-hmm. He loved to tell his stories. Especially he loved to tell his Stanley Steamer stories.
What was that?
I think it was his father or some relative of his had a Stanley Steamer, and he used to tell us what a great car it was and how quiet it was, and, uh-huh. and how you could hold your foot on the brake and step on the accelerator and lift your foot off the brake. If you shoot ahead, you get a real fast getaway. And and this was in interiors. I don't think I started out with him, though. I started.
Really?
I worked with, do you remember Gil Spear? Do you,
oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. You worked with Gil?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you talk with him?
Yes. What kind of, what, how
oh,
did
you know,
find
I sure
him?
Would like to hear some of these tapes.
I don't remember what he said, though, mm-hmm. so I don't. I would rather have your recollections. What do you remember about Gil?
Gil? Oh, we were very good friends.
Were you?
We used to go out. I remember at the time he was, he had a new house.
Uh-huh.
And he was building a garage,
uh-huh.
and he was doing a lot of the work himself. And he'd go around, and we'd go out at noontime,
uh-huh.
and look at these garages that were being built around the area.
Yeah.
And we'd always come back late, but I never worried because I was with the boss.
Well, Gil was head of the studio.
Yeah.
Under Bob McGuire.
No, he was exterior. That must have been before I went with Bob McGuire. I got transferred, not because I wanted to be.
Who was exterior? Spear or McGuire?
McGuire was interior. Spear was exterior.
And then you worked first with him.
Yeah.
He was the head of the exterior studio.
Well, finished. At least there they have it broken down into small pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been just
front.
Might have been just the Ford studio or just the Mercury studio.
Yeah, it was the Ford studio. Well, I think it wasn't.
It could have been.
Gil
yeah.
Spear in the Ford studio. What kind of a guy was Gil? Was he?
Oh, he's a real
great guy to work with.
Oh yeah, he was a great guy.
Uh-huh.
He was no nonsense. He didn't go for any. Any phony business.
Any horsing around.
Yeah. Well, no, not that.
No, he didn't
horse around. I can show you pictures of him, boy, with him with a mop on his head. That's another thing. That I don't know how the hell we ever got away that they shoot you today. But I have pictures taken right in the styling department.
Uh-huh.
And if you ever entered a styling department with a camera, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, if you were employing or something.
Oh, no.
So.
No, no.
What do they think? You sell the photographs?
I suppose, yeah.
They
get out, yeah.
Much like these Russian spies.
Right, yeah.
So
just about equivalent to being a Russian spy, yeah.
Yeah. Security is very tight in those early post-war days because nobody wanted the competition of what they were doing.
Right,
yeah.
But here you see how free and easy it was at Chrysler. Why, heck, we wouldn't go in shows either. We were taking pictures, but,
uh-huh.
but we did take them, yeah. And I must have taken them because I got the pictures.
Well, were you working on the facelifts at Ford, or were you working on the 49?
Let's see, we went there. The 49 Ford had just been finished.
Had it?
Yeah.
You got there in 47?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is the prototype, had just been finished. And
what'd you think of it?
I thought it wasn't as good as the 47 Studebaker because it was high.
Uh-huh.
It was too high. I felt that if they could have sliced 2 or 3 inches longitudinally out of it, Lord, it would have been good looking, but it was just awfully high.
You're comparing the 49 Ford with the 47 Studebaker.
Yeah.
The Studebaker got there first.
They did. They were the first by far with a post-war car.
Yeah. Which one was that?
That was the 47. That was sedans and the Starlight Coupe.
Starlight Coupe.
And the three-window coupe they had.
They really got a jump on the opposition.
Oh, they did, yeah. That was the advantage of being a small company. They could move faster.
Plus, I think Lowy, as you may have later found out, I think Lowy kept a design staff on all during the war.
Yeah.
Yeah, paid for it, yeah.
Yeah.
We were working on material, that the post-war stuff way back in 1943, 44.
Yeah.
Who was heading up the design center at Ford in those days, do you remember?
Yeah. Excuse me. It wasn't Gregory, it was Tom Hibbert.
Tom Hibbert.
Yeah.
He'd come in from?
he'd come from Hibbert and Darin.
Right.
Years before.
But after Hibbert and Darin had broken up, he'd come from.
Yeah, I don't know. He had a place in Paris, or I don't remember what that step was, but he. That wasn't for very long. After Tom Hibbert, George Snyder. George Snyder was a boss. I don't remember if he was the overall boss or not. I think he was.
Mr. Peach, George Snyder had come over from GM to take over the supervision, the general supervision of the design department at Ford.
That's right. In fact, there was a big exodus from General Motors to Ford. This was at the time that Bunky...
the elder Mr. Knutson.
Yeah, Bunky Knutson, yeah.
Mm.
That's the time...
That he
came over.
Well, that
before
be,
he brought all of these people over with him.
That'd be a little later. Not Bunky. Bunky came much later.
Who was it then?
Gene Bourdonnais.
Well, Gene Bourdonnais, but when I knew him, was just one of the boys on the board.
Bunky Knutson didn't come to Ford until the late 60s.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I don't remember. Who was it?
Oswald?
John Oswald. Now, this is what
John Oswald, they
came together, I believe.
Would it have been McPherson or Youngren?
Youngren was there and McPherson was there.
Ernie Breach would have brought
them over. Ernie Breach. Maybe it was Ernie Breach.
I think Ernie Breach was responsible for picking up some MGM people because, as you know from being there, they were trying to emulate the GM formula.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Did you get a chance to see Henry Ford II during those days?
No, I never did.
Mr. Oswald and Mr. Schneider both came over from General Motors, along with Tom Hibbert. What was Tom Hibbert's duties? Was he a sort of a general supervisor of design?
Yeah, he was. He was the head of the styling.
He was a legendary custom car maker.
Yeah,
They figured he'd be a good supervisor.
Yeah.
How'd it work out?
Well, that was just a short period, so I never really. I don't even recall. Meeting him. I've corresponded with him in later years.
Did you?
On different things, but I don't recall ever meeting him.
Mm-hmm. Your immediate supervisor were the studio chiefs, pretty much.
Yeah.
And those are the ones you worked through.
Right,
Gil Spear and later on...
Bob McGuire.
So you worked with Spear for a while, and did you enjoy working in the Ford studio?
Yes, very much.
What did they have you do?
Well, they're the usual thing again.
Mm-hmm. Bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Fenders and taillights and front ends.
Yeah, I still got quite a few Ford sketches that I did when I was there.
Uh-huh.
And later with Bob McGuire, I did some instrument panels. And never got into fabrics much, which never appealed to me very much.
You're pretty much an exterior man for most of your time.
Yeah, that's what I like the best. Although the instrument panels can be quite interesting.
Yeah, that'd be fun, yeah.
Yeah, but the seat fabrics and stuff like that, why?
That wasn't for you.
No.
We were talking about the fact that designers collect other designers' sketches and renderings when those who executed them might have thrown them into the discard pile or simply piled them up on the top of a filing cabinet or something.
Or where if you didn't save them, they'd be lost.
Right, yeah. So
yes, I did a lot
apparently
of that.
Apparently someone had saved your drawings, and you thought that you had done the same thing in those days.
Yeah, I did quite a lot. In fact, I still have them.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I even had the crazy idea, not serious, but it would be a lot of fun to have a little place where I could have other designers' work on display. And I don't know who would be interested in it besides myself, but it was just a thought I've had.
Well, you mentioned that even though you were happy at Ford, working with Gil Spear and Bob McGuire, what sort of person was Bob McGuire? Was he a good boss? Understanding?
Yeah, I think he was.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of the rendering, a lot of the work himself, and his rendering had a distinct quality about it. You could always spot his work, but he had a habit of putting highlights on fabric. It looked very glamorous, but it was very unrealistic to see a bright star highlight on a cloth seat, you know.
Oh, really? You mean, would you later be embossed in the fabric?
Oh, no, just to make the rendering look
I see.
Spooky. His term was spooky.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another thing that you pick up different vocabularies from different designers. One of his favorites was spooky.
Spooky. Yeah. What do you mean?
Give it more spooky.
Oh, I see. Okay. He went more mysterious, exotic
qualities. Right, yeah.
But you were happy there, but again, as you say, you were a bit of a gypsy in these days. I guess that's all designers were those days.
Well, a lot of them, some more than others, of course.
Yeah.
And for instance, I think I would have gone nuts if I'd stayed in one place from the very beginning.
Yeah. So you move over to, you move back to Chrysler, 1950. How'd that come
about? Is that where we went next? Yeah, 1950, that's right. Oh, you got it there, too.
So how did that come about?
Well, I wanted to work for Virgil Exner.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I considered him a very glamorous figure, and I thought he was a good designer, and he was a great person, too. He was a very nice man.
He had a reputation throughout the industry.
Yeah. And, well, I thought there'd be a lot of prestige in working with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, he hired me. And
How did you happen? Did you take a day off?
I went over. I got another headache.
Took your sketches over?
Yeah.
And did you talk to him personally?
Yes, yes.
He interviewed the candidates himself? The prospective
candidates. And he was there at a good time because Chrysler really needed somebody. Cars were very stodgy, and
the K.T. Keller influence that
still
prevailed after World War II.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, X's first car when he went there was a 39 Chrysler sedan. It was one of K.T. Keller's.
39?
Uh-huh.
He'd been there all through
Wait a minute, 49.
49, okay, yeah.
10 years off there.
That was about the last Keller influence car.
Yeah, 49. Did I say 39 before?
Yeah.
Well, I meant 49.
Okay, that's right. So Keller was just waiting for Virgil Exner was waiting for Keller to retire so he could really build that styling department or something.
Yeah, they
a little more glamorous than that.
They dubbed it the forward look, remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, whose idea was that?
Well, I think the advertising.
But it came out of Exner's design.
Oh, right.
They really were forward.
They were, yeah.
Yeah.
And Finns have been much maligned, but I got to admit that some of the early Finns I kind of liked, the ones that weren't so extreme, that were, for instance, the, 57, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 57 Chrysler, that was quite nice. It was long, and it was sort of a takeoff from the Chrysler Ghia that was done about that time.
Now, Chrysler at this time, after World War II, had gotten into a working arrangement with the Ghia coach building company in Turin, right?
Yeah.
And how did that come about? Did you ever hear
who was behind it all, I don't know, but that was a fun period because that was when we were working on all these beautiful one-off designs to be built in Italy, and we knew that they were going to be built, and we knew they'd be beautifully built.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the most fun.
Was that Exner's doing?
Yeah, those were his designs.
Uh-huh. He wanted to give the Chrysler line a
glamour,
European
yeah.
flair and style that it hadn't had for years.
Right. Yeah.
And he had a new management in there. Keller was gone.
Yeah. Who was it? I'm trying to think of the man's name that took his place. You know it as well as I do. Anyway.
Chrysler began to get a reputation in the 50s for turning out some really well engineered, but beautifully styled.
Right.
Beautifully designed.
Yeah,
do you remember any particular models that you worked on that you liked?
I liked the DeSoto Adventurer the best.
The Adventurer? Was that a show car?
That was one of Exner's show cars, yeah.
Did you work on that?
No.
Uh-huh.
No. I made some renderings for it.
Did you? Uh-huh.
But I didn't have anything to do with the design of it. That I recall.
Uh-huh.
I might have made a suggestion or two for an instrument panel, but other than that, I...
So this was a culmination of one of your dreams to work for a well-known and well-regarded
yeah. Design master.
And boy, we had a lot of fun. Boy, at the time, we all belonged to the Sports Car Club of America. And we used to go to their meetings once a week. But we very seldom got to the meeting. We always got stuck on a bar someplace.
In a bar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stuck on a bar, I'm thinking of my sailing days. And we kind of disappointed me because I wanted to go to the meetings usually, but we had such a...
You didn't drink that much, all your co-workers stopped.
Yeah. I drank too, but I managed to keep it under... fairly well under control.
You must have been the driver then for all that.
No, X was.
Oh, he drove. He would go too.
Sure.
And he mixed with.
Oh, that's why we loved him so much. Yeah.
He said he was a prince of it.
He was. He was. Oh, we all thought the world of him. Mm-hmm. He was just one of us. So we
one of the boys.
Yeah, that's we all great. Felt so privileged to work for him.
What would you do with these sports car meets? Would you?
Well, they. I don't remember. They discussed their rallies and the different events. And I used to have an MG at the time.
Did you?
And
you've gotten rid of your Studebaker. But
no, I kept that.
Did you? Two. Even though it was a lemon, you kept it for 7 years. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. And
what did you do with the MG? Did you do a little racing or?
No, but we went to a few rallies.
Rallies.
But,
and what did you think of the MG?
Oh, I loved the darn thing.
Yeah.
It was an oil burner, but.
It was a plastic. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a TD. I liked the TC better, but. TC rode like it had square wheels. It was, it was a hard riding car.
That's a nice illustrative phrase, square wheels.
Well, I remember I took this one out to try it out, and I was on a backcountry dirt road, and it was hard ride. Then I came to a coming out to the highway. I said, "Well, she'll smooth out." You know, mm-hmm. I got out on the highway. And it was this is
really?
This is bad.
What was it? Pickup or what?
Well, no, the very hard suspension.
Oh, that terrible European suspension.
Yeah,
they're still using it sometimes.
Well, not to the extreme. They're much better handling now. Yeah. Now you got good handling now.
What besides the DeSoto adventure that you liked? What was the theme? The theme of Exner's. Post 1950s work was pretty much forward and onward and upward.
Well, it was just good, fluid, clean, sophisticated, good design. It was just exciting,
mm-hmm.
And looked like it had, come out of a wind tunnel. Although X didn't go heavy on the idea of streamlining, as we call it,
mm-hmm.
But But his designs had character,
uh-huh.
And some of the ones that, well, one of the ones he was quite influential on was the Valiant of, what year was that Valiant that came out? That it was the first Valiant.
Mid-50s?
Plymouth Valiant.
Earlier?
Yeah, it was about the middle 50s, I think.
Mm-hmm. Was the Valiant one of Exner's creations?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was he thinking out there?
Well, the car had a lot of individuality, a lot of distinction. You didn't mistake a Valiant for anything else.
Was it smaller than the other
cars? It was about the size of the later Dart.
Mm-hmm.
They call it an intermediate.
Intermediate, but in essence, it was a small car for Chrysler.
For that time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was well designed, well engineered. Did it go well? Did it sell?
Yeah, we had one for a while.
Did you?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So Exner was all over the place. He was trying all sorts of experimental stuff. I mean, not experimental, but I mean.
Well, the thing of it is, he tried for originality.
That's it. Yeah.
And he, at the same time, to be original and to be good, that's no mean trick.
Mm-hmm.
And but he pulled it off on many occasions, I thought.
His esprit de corps permeated the whole design staff at that time.
Yeah. Well. Funny, we were sort of a clique to ourselves. I think the rest of the designers hated our guts, I think.
Now, who was we?
That's the impression
who
I had.
Was we?
Well, the people that worked for Exner.
Okay.
See, the boys that were there before Exner came.
Oh, I see.
You see, Exner brought in a lot of men.
In other words, people who were hired by Exner thought of themselves as a special unit.
Right.
Exner's boys.
Yeah, we were a little bit better.
Who were some of those in the early 50s that you remember?
Oh,
that group?
Well, Wally, Cliff Voss.
Uh-huh.
You know, you heard his name?
I've talked to him.
Have you?
Oh, I just on telephone. He's going to do an interview a little bit later.
Oh.
He's in good shape.
Last I heard, he was sort of a recluse, but this was some years ago.
I think he said this.
Yeah.
He sounds good.
Yeah. I don't know if he's doing anything or not. And then there was Maury Baldwin.
Maury?
Maury.
Maury Baldwin.
Maury Baldwin, yeah. He was a Canadian. Mm-hmm. He was a good egg, too.
Talented.
Yeah.
All these people were talented, obviously. Right?
Cliff especially.
Actually, wouldn't have.
Cliff was especially talented.
Was he?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
More, he was the most talented, I think.
Any others?
You were a small group. I think that's all there was. Just Maury and Cliff and myself. I think that's all. That was all of us.
Did you have a model in that group?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Don't remember who it was.
Someone who actually retired, huh?
It could have been, yeah.
So, were you doing experimental work or were you doing production?
Well, we did a lot of that, those show cars, and then we did some, as I remember, we did some production stuff, too.
But besides the Explorer, do you remember any other show cars that you worked on?
There are quite a few. I've got some pictures of X with some of the designs we did. Oh, I know how I got those. You couldn't have taken a camera into the design department at that time, but these were done at his home.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wanted something really secret, why, you'd do it at his house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Didn't want anybody else to know about it.
Yeah, right.
But he was over the, he was overall head of Stani, but your group, he kept your group part as sort of a semi-experimental group.
Yeah, it was done that way.
Mm-hmm. So semi-secret stuff you were working on.
Yeah. You know, Exner worked for Loy for a while, and they had a falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't stand each other.
Was this in the 40s?
And then the crazy part of it all, I leave X and I go to work for Loy. It wasn't not a very smart thing to do, but looking back on it, but there again, there was, I thought it would be very glamorous to work for Raymond Loy, and I still think it was, you know.
Let's get to that shortly.
And Chrysler was with Exner.
And you enjoyed that very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've discussed that in some detail. Any comments on that second go around at Chrysler? You're working for a brilliant designer and a neat guy, and it was quite an experience for you, wasn't it? What prompted you to leave?
Well,
you'd work for Exner, now you wanted to work for another brilliant designer. What prompted you to leave
it was a
marvelous environment there with your
It was rather a glamorous opportunity to work for Raymond Loy, and it was considered, you know, everybody was quite envious of the fact that I was going to go down there.
How did it come about?
Well, I got it through my, I know how it was. Originally, back in 19, some years before, it was during the war. Bob Cota, I was offered this job during the war, and I didn't take it.
Who offered it to you?
Loy.
But I mean, you mentioned Bob Cota.
Here's the thing. I was offered the job, and I didn't take it because I was afraid that I would be drafted.
It wasn't as essential as your work.
So I recommended Bob Cota in my place.
Where was Bob at that time?
He was, he was still at Ford, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, what?
Anyway.
Who contacted you during the war from the Lowy organization? How'd that offer come through?
Well, I remember meeting Baker Barnhart.
Barnhart.
He was one of Loy's executives.
B-A-R.
B-A-R-N-H-A-R-T, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I remember he interviewed me in a gas station at the corner where I lived.
Really? He came after you?
Yeah.
For you.
And that's the way I recommended Bob Cole in my place, and I told him why and everything.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So Bob took it, and he really made good down there. He,
the master and, modeler.
Yeah, but designer he is, really.
Yeah.
Designer modeler.
Yeah, right.
And so then later on in 1952, that was when Barnard came out in 1952. That's when I was interviewed and when I went down.
Well, he came back to see you.
No, he came out once, just in 52. And the original, when I was originally offered, I don't remember who made the offer.
Oh, it wasn't Barnard in 42.
No. It wouldn't have been that early, but anyhow.
I'm sorry, I mixed up. Didn't you say during the war, about 44 rather, you were contacted by an emissary of Raymond Lawley?
Yeah, I don't remember who it was.
Oh, I thought that was Barnard. No.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you recommended Bob Cove, and then later on, did Bob return the favor?
Yes, I went. Yeah, I went down in 52.
How'd that happen?
Well, I let Bob know that I would like to work for him, and he paved the way for me.
Uh-huh.
So I went down in 52.
To where?
To Studebaker.
So you have to spell these out because these people don't know what you and I know.
Right, that's
so
true.
You have to be precise.
Yeah.
Okay. And what was the attraction? The attraction was Mr. Lowy's reputation and the cars themselves. You had a Starlight Coupe, and although it was a lemon mechanically, you liked it. You liked the design. Right?
Yeah. That was the fact that it was, I guess Bob gave me a good sales talk, and I liked the idea of myself, working for Lowy, so I jumped at the chance, and I'll never forget my first day, Bob took me into the studio, and under a tarpaulin over in one corner of the studio was a car all under this big white tarp.
Mm-hmm.
Bob goes over and he whips off this tarpaulin and tells me, there's the 53 Studebaker, and I thought he was kidding because the thing looked like a designer's creation. It didn't look like a production car
really?
At all.
Uh-huh.
It was so much lower and so much sleeker than what was being done at the time,
Uh-huh.
And so I was really,
thrilled.
Impressed
and thrilled. Yeah.
Great. So
your family, did your family appreciate the move to South Bend?
Yeah, they enjoyed it down there, and we.
Your wife and children, they were growing.
Yeah, we
by
moved
then.
Down. I remember it was on a winter day, and there was ice on the roads, and.
Oh boy.
And.
What were you driving then?
I think I had an old Plymouth.
Another Plymouth, hey. Always a Chrysler man, always a Chrysler man.
Yeah, I don't know why it just happened that way. I remember we had our cat with us, and the cat decided to go to the bathroom in the car.
Always.
And God, it took months to get that odor out of the car.
You couldn't throw the cat out.
Huh? No. Oh, no, I couldn't do that.
Too much of a family pet.
Right.
Yeah. So Bob gave you a tour of the studio. Did you meet Mr. Lowy?
Not then. We didn't see too much of him because he spent most of his time in either New York or Paris.
Oh, I see. This and was just an outpost of his far-flung empire.
Yeah, right. He'd come around, we'd all meet him, and he was very cordial.
Give us this thumbnail sketch of him up close. What was he like?
Well, he had this very heavy French accent.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which he never lost.
No. And he was quite a flamboyant dresser.
Mm-hmm. But always and tasteful. But
but you could see right away he looked like money,
he always advertised that. Yeah. Did he have personally monogrammed?
Probably. I remember one thing that was, I'll never forget, he smoked these Turkish cigarettes.
Oh my God.
And they had the most awful odor.
Heavy,
oh,
tobacco.
Gee, yeah.
He used to be prized by people who smoked cigarettes.
I guess
so. How they stood it, myself.
I don't know.
Yeah. Highly aromatic.
Yeah.
And it's very strong flavor.
Right.
So he would breeze in, they stay for a few days, and then take off.
Yeah, that's right.
Who were his lieutenants who ran the place? Who were the
It was Bob Burke.
I spell that.
B-O-U-R-K.
E.
E, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Bob Burke, he was the chief designer.
Yeah, and then Bob Cotto was his assistant.
Uh-huh. K-O-T-O.
Yeah, right. And,
they're quite crew down there. Do you remember some of the guys?
It was pretty good size. Nothing like what they had in Detroit, but we used to work. We never got any overtime pay.
Really?
And,
Were they kind of stingy?
No, they paid well.
But no overtime.
Because here's the thing. As I understand it, the more money and man-made, the more it was better for Lloyd because he got a cut of everybody's salary.
Oh my God!
What a deal, huh?
Really, a kickback, huh?
Yeah, and they always told us.
How'd you find that out?
I don't remember who told me that, but I'd heard it.
You mean it was a personal kickback, not a company kickback?
Oh,
it went through their accounting system.
Yeah, yeah.
So Lloyd assumed that he would hire top designers and they would work for Studebaker, but he would get a percentage of their earnings.
Yeah.
Or were you working for the Lowy firm? So?
I'm trying to think whether we got the check from Lloyd. Do you remember that, Lou?
What?
Did we get our checks from Lloyd or from Studebaker?
From Lloyd, I think.
I think so.
So you were working for the Lowy organization.
Yeah.
Your husband tells me that there was a kickback to Lowy from each salary check. What percentage was it? 10%?
I don't know.
He made a bundle. That was during the war.
Oh, right. Do you think it was even in the 50s too?
Yeah. Right. We went down there in 50.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. After.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what were your assignments? First assignments, and who assigned them?
Either Bob Burke or Bob Cotto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what did they hire you for? What were your attributes they felt they should have?
Well, there's somebody else to furnish ideas, I guess.
Ideas and a passion for details.
Yeah, right.
Detail work. You were very patient and painstaking, which some of them weren't. Some of them were rather impatient.
Well, there are all kinds of those that work loosely and
those that work tightly.
Yeah.
You were one of the latter, huh?
Yeah. Sober but tight or something.
What were some of your first assignments?
In general,
what did you do there?
Well, I don't sound like a broken record, but it's the same everywhere.
Everywhere you went, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's a different set of circumstances, different problems, but trying to achieve the same
sectional
same thing.
And detail work.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You seem to be a front end man and a.
Well, the front ends were always considered so important.
Sure.
Not so much as Studebaker. They usually went for the whole concept pretty much.
Oh, did they? That's good.
Yeah.
Lowy was more of a concept man.
Yeah, there too. You see, we only had Studebaker. We didn't have a dozen other names to consider, you know.
To do everything, yeah.
Yeah. So, every 2 or 3 years, they'd want a new body, and of course, even at the time I went down there, they were in pretty poor financial condition, and it got steadily worse.
There was always a cash flow problem. Huh?
Yeah. It was always shaky. You never knew it. And then they came out
on the edge of ruin every once in a while.
Oh, so often, yeah.
But Bob Burke and you and Bob Cotto would pull them out every once in a while with these smashing new designs.
It seemed to me that every time it came to a fork in the road, the management had a knack for taking the wrong fork.
What did the management do that the poor decisions they made? Or
I can't remember anything specifically, but it's just that they weren't with it, I guess.
You sort of doubled up at Studebaker, didn't you? You were sort of you were expected to do several disciplines.
Well, yeah, that's right. Now they took it for granted that anybody that could push a pencil or a paintbrush could handle a clay tool. Be a modeler,
you thought that was unique in your
Well, it was because in Detroit that was unheard of.
Uh-huh.
In fact, at Chrysler it was so bad that the modelers belonged to the union and the designers didn't. Now, isn't that an awful setup?
Yeah.
You put your hand on a clay tool, boy, you're in
trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I think the modelers were probably organized early because they weren't paid as much as they thought they should get.
Probably, usually something like that brings it on. Yeah.
Yeah. So you, as you say, there was no studios or no titles or very few titles.
It made sense to me that we had a boss and an assistant. What more did you need?
Sure.
You know,
this business. You're all making Studebaker, so there were any divisions. Yeah.
You go to a place like Ford, especially at that time. Of course, Chrysler's got the same trouble, the same disease now. That, but in a way, it's a good thing because they're more titles there are available, what a chance there is for individual advancement. But I mean, I was always, frankly, a little bit amused by these fancy titles,
fancy titles
like chief designer and executive chief designer.
Yeah.
All these,
assistant exec.
Yeah.
Then managers. Yeah. Then supervisors. Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of. So we didn't have any of that to contend.
No, you had ego problems, but not that kind of ego problem.
No.
What kind of a guy was Bob Burke? He's still around.
He was a driver.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I had a letter from him a couple of years ago.
Did you?
Uh-huh. He was a driver. He's a good designer,
uh-huh.
good worker.
Uh-huh.
But boy, we'd work overtime, you know. And 1-2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, there was a show coming on, a mm-hmm. show coming up. And we'd work until Bob got tired.
Uh-huh.
And boy, did he have the stamina.
He never got tired.
Oh, gee. God, I'd be lightheaded. I'd be so tired.
Can you imagine. Your wife and children waiting for you, saying, where's Daddy?
It's probably out boozing it up someplace.
But not you. You were the only sober member.
Well, we were all pretty sober.
Yeah. Well, you had to be.
Yeah.
How could you drink and do a proper design? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
What about Bob Cotto? He's been given credit for the primary model design for the 49 Ford. Did you ever tell you anything about that?
That's sort of an involved story between Bob.